Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 97. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and with David Todd currently on hiatus, or is it hiatus? Alex Cazora sitting in for him once again, and he's no fool on this April Fool's Day. Alex, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Dave. How long were you sitting on that joke for? 364 days, probably.
Hey, my mind constantly races way ahead of my mouth sometimes. I don't know. Sometimes, and for people that think that this show is overly coordinated, you should know better by now. You know, right when we get on, usually whether it's David or Alex, we kind of hammer out, you know, about three or four talking points that we want to get to, and it's a thoroughly non-planned show, and I think, and hopefully that's what makes it so interesting to several of you that listen, and thank you for doing so as well, too. Hard to believe, 6 seasons of this podcast already. Enough with the introductions there. Let's get to, some happenings in around Steeler Nation here, and I guess it's probably best to open up this podcast with talking about the Steelers signing defensive lineman Ricardo Matthews on Thursday, and I don't think we're overly surprised as to the position or the type player that he is, only probably the name that really kind of I think flew under my radar and probably yours as well. But you've since had a chance, as usual, to kind of break down the signing, you know, talking about Ricardo Matthews, and why don't you give us an overview of who Ricardo Matthews is and isn't.
Yeah, Dave. Matthews, you know, like you said, the position signing is not a surprise. When there's smoke, there's fire, and the Steelers had brought in several defensive linemen, whether it was Jason Jones or Jack Crawford or Mike Martin. So it's not a surprise to see them go after the position. But Matthews, you know, first time we heard about him was whenever he had signed the contract. So the Steelers were able to sneak that one in. You know, you're talking about a, you know, March 31st signing, so you're never going to get a real super high-caliber guy. I definitely see him as a defensive end more than I do a nose tackle. In San Diego, he primarily played as the one and the three in their sub-package, their 2-4-5 defense, rarely involved in their base. He really didn't get really any time playing the five there, but I think he has some of the skills that can translate. You know, he's a guy that, you know, against dry blocks, he can anchor and hold the point of attack. You don't want him in there against double teams. He'll get blown out and he'll get washed. You know, as a pass rusher, there's some energy, there's some effort, but the production really isn't there. You see that in the stats, only one sack last year. I think maybe that was his first career sack, or regardless, the sack totals are low. But, you know, this is a guy that can basically play up and down the line. San Diego did do a couple different things with him. He's a decent athlete, much better than Cam Thomas, can flow down the line against zone schemes. I think his run fills are good. His gap discipline, is really solid when he shows some technique of being able to maintain his gap. So, you know, we've talked about it before, ad nauseum, and, you know, you have to add some rotation behind Hayward and Tuitt. They can't handle the load like they did last year every single year. You'll destroy him. So a very low-tier signing. I think he will make the roster, though, and it was a necessary one.
Definitely not a guy you want out there playing the five tech in base.
Yeah, as little as possible, and that's what San Diego's motto was. It was very clear, very quickly, that there was a very clear effort to not put him in their base defense. And I don't know if that was because over concerns of lack of length or what, but I think in terms of his skill set, I think he still can play the five, because he's going to have to do it a little bit here in Pittsburgh. I really don't know how you're going to get away with him not playing the five at all, even in a, you know, era where you're playing, you know, your base defense only 27% to 30% of the time. So I think he has the ability to do it. I just don't think San Diego used him for whatever reason, you know, they chose to.
what did he play? Something like 500 snaps last year?
Yeah, it was 511 on defense, and then special teams, he was on their field goal unit over the C-gap. So, you know, he's got some experience, which is nice.
Lacks a little bit, of course, we don't have because he wasn't invited to the combine back when he was coming out. We don't have, you know, specifics on arm length and all like that. But a little, you know, one would think, and that's dangerous in this situation when you don't have measurements, while he is a bit undersized height-wise, you know, maybe he has some long limbs attached to him.
Yeah.
Does that show up any on tape?
I mean, it's always tough to tell, you know, 1 or 2 inches whenever you're looking at you know, coach's tape. I don't think his length is anything spectacular. I mean, maybe in that 32.5, 33-inch range, maybe tops. I'd love to know for sure, but I just couldn't find any information. So if anyone does know Ricardo Matthews' arm length, please let us know. And I just wonder, you know, he played Cincinnati – Dave, in his college ball, and Mike Tomlin was there for 2 years back in 99 and 2000, and there's still a couple of Cincinnati front office guys. Their director of football operations has been there since 1989, so I wonder if that played a small role into things, too, about learning about who he is as a player and maybe a little bit of intel on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, you look at the signing, and it will be a shock if it's more than the league minimum. You know, when the Steelers bring these guys in, I bet they bring about two or three of the same position in town at the same time, and they put that 1 year veteran minimum on the contract on the table with one pen. And they look at both of them and see which one of them wants to sign it, you know, because they brought in the Crawford, I believe, on Thursday as well, too. So, you know, they had two of them in there. Two men enter, one man leaves, you know. And knowing the Steelers and how they do business, especially in the Kevin Colbert era, it's hard to imagine that Matthews got any more than the minimum, and at most – an $80,000 signing bonus, which would qualify him for the minimum salary cap benefit. The good thing is while we on paper would expect him to make the 53-man roster at this point, that's dangerous to do, being such a cheap contract and with the draft coming up. But this is typical what the Steelers do. Mm-hmm. They bring in players at positions of need right before the draft. They don't sign them to expensive contracts. And then it allows them to really approach the draft with an open mind. So, you know, there's going to be a slew of players, we think, competing for, you know, one of possibly six spots on that defensive line. And Ricardo Matthews right now, you would have to consider a leader in the clubhouse for one of those, say, number five or number six spot.
Right, absolutely do. I think he'll be the leader going into this thing. And I always think back to your study, I think you did last year, Dave, about the free agents that Colbert brings in, and almost all of them make it. I think the only one that never, you know, didn't make it was Kevin Barlow. So just historically, you know, when they bring those guys in, they target guys that they really believe are going to make the roster.
And I believe, and boy, I'm glad you refreshed my memory there. That study, however, though, I think if you broke it down to players signed prior to June 1st, it's even greater, right? Wasn't Barlow a guy signed after June 1st?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but I just remember the whole totality of it, that most guys that are brought in, they stick around.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, as far as if people concerned about how this affects compensatory, you really shouldn't even worry about that because it being a minimum signing. Generally, you know, history has told us that those kind of contracts don't even factor into things. So, you know, what positions next before the draft? Could we see yet another wide receiver, you know, veteran wide receiver sign for the minimum? Perhaps maybe – a safety even at this point?
Maybe, but that pool's really shrinking. I'm not sure who would even, you know, who the best talent available really is pretty thin. And, you know, I think Colbert or Tomlin said that they were pretty content at corner, so I don't expect a corner. I think they're done, Dave, to be honest with you.
I would not be surprised to see another wide receiver brought in.
I think they like what they had with Eli Rogers and Shaq and Phillips, and I think they'd rather roll with them and maybe a draft pick than bring in a you know, real low tier veteran guy.
But by that, let me state that a guy I mean, we're talking David Nelson quality, you know. I mean, look, we still have, what, 30 days before the draft takes place. And I'll just throw it out there that it wouldn't surprise me. I'm not going to point to the fence on there. But I don't think this is the last free agent pre-June 1st that we're talking about. So I'll just leave it at that right now. The calendar is now turned over to April, and as usual, we've been able to kind of scout out a few of the guys that will be coming in for pre-draft visits, and we expect actually two of those to take place on Friday, with the newest name being Duke safety Jeremy Cashy. And I haven't listened to the interview yet, but he was supposed to be on Sirius XM NFL Radio, which, by the way, if you have some extra money in your sofa seat cushions, what a great channel. And it's gotten even better right now because they archive everything, so you don't have to listen to it live. You can just go to the website, and that's an unpaid solicitation on my part. I've thoroughly enjoyed listening to NFL radio over the years, and it's well worth the money. But Jeremy Cash, a guy that, you know, I think has been easy to kind of link to the Steelers, you know, over the course of the pre-draft process, a player I think, you know, more, you know, there was talk about, you know, is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? Is he kind of a Buchanan type player? A guy probably best suited to play in the box more than anything else, but a guy probably a second day guy. I have him slated as a round three or round four guy. What do you know about Jeremy Cash?
Well, I mean, I think everyone kind of knows who Jeremy Cash is because he's, you know, kind of buying into the new mold of that faux linebacker, I like to say, that hybrid guy. You know, you mentioned Buchanan. I think of Mark Barron and Jaquiski Tartt and what, you know, some other sub-package guys have done. I don't know if he can play as a true safety and in space, so I think his role is kind of more defined in that. You know, what he did at Duke was playing, you know, within 8 yards of the line of scrimmage, really being as that linebacker spot in most cases. Here's my question, though, Dave. And if we were doing the David Todd radio show, I would say we'll get the answer right after the break. This would be my big teaser. But here's a thought that's on my mind, and I'm wrestling with it. I'm back and forth. I don't have a solid opinion on it, so I'm dying to get your thoughts, Dave. Is, you know, we know that Lawrence Timmons and Vince Williams are going into the last year of their contracts. Could the Steelers be making a potential switch to playing more of this hybrid defense with that, you know, fifth DB, like we've seen, you know, Arizona do and St. Louis do? Could we see that more often? We saw it some last year, the last quarter of the season, with Robert Golden coming in to play dime on third and long. So I don't know. I mean, if they show interest in Cash and this Jatavius Brown kid from Akron, who kind of fits that mold as well, could that be a sign?
I think so, and I think we'll know more after this draft actually takes place.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen the typical. It's happened for a while, you know, but we get so caught up with the height and the weight when it comes to players that have played kind of the Mike, you know, what we've understood to be the Mike position over the years. But in today's NFL game, you know, you have to have these players that can not only chase and play sideline to sideline, they have to be, you know, athletic, have enough athleticism to also run with some of these bigger, you know, tight end / wide receivers that we're seeing in the league now. So I guess it wouldn't be overly surprising. Shoot, you know, we heard for years how light James Ferrier played, and you know, kind of, I think Foote in his later days, you know, that weight kind of dropped as well too. Obviously, you look at a guy like Ryan Shazier, more athletic than he is, what, a thumper, you know. And you know, over the years, we've heard time and time from the Steelers that, you know, both the linebacker positions need to be kind of interchangeable. Inside linebacker positions need to be interchangeable now. That there's kind of less focus on the Mac and the Buck spot. So, yeah, I think the game's almost dictating it across the league. I mean, you see teams like Arizona, you see teams like St. Louis, and geez, you could probably go on down the line as well when it comes to this type of position. I think we'll learn a lot by this draft. I think you have to have, in the age of the fullback being kind of a dinosaur, not having to really have that thumper, and with more teams. Well, here's the thing too, though, is you're having teams two gap less in the front and more one gap, which makes kind of these linebackers susceptible to the releasing interior linemen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be strong enough to kind of fend those players off too. So I guess that's a long way of saying I'm not really sure, but when you kind of look at today's athlete and more specifically the kind of guys the Steelers are looking at, I think it's fathomable.
And like I said, Dave, there's a time to do it. The time is now because Timmons and Williams go into the last year of their deal. And if you're thinking long term, how do you replace them? You can try to find the perfect inside linebacker who's like a Shazier with a crazy amount of athleticism but can play the run as well. Or you could probably take a little easier route and try to find that hybrid guy that's already a good athlete and find somebody like a Cash that is ultra-physical and can play the run. So in some sense, with, like you said, kind of the way the NFL is today, you're facing these teams that can go two tight end sets as a bunch package but then goes five wide with that two tight end set the next play, and you're having to defend the whole field now. I think it's almost in a way easier to find a guy that's that hybrid player because they already have that kind of innate natural athleticism. So, I'm not sure. The Steelers did this in, 2013, I think, with Troy because of the injury to Larry Foote in week one. And so Troy basically played that faux linebacker spot for the entire season. So it's not new to Mike Tomlin or Keith Butler, who was, of course, on the staff at the time. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do either. Like you said, the draft, of course, is going to help tell us a lot of those answers, as it always does. But I think there's that real distinct possibility.
So, in other words, brother, can you spare a dime?
They look at you with the jokes.
I mean, because typically, we started to see a little bit of that last year with pulling, in other words, I think you could see more, or what you're hinting as you see more six DBs on the field in sub-package this year.
What the Steelers did last year with Robert Cole.
And I use that loosely with that six being the kind of hybrid safety linebacker.
Right. That's what I'm trying to get at, is that they could do, let's just hypothetically say they drafted Jeremy Cash so to replace Timmons, so next year you have Jeremy Cash next to Ryan Shazier. That's what we're talking about as a possibility, and it makes a lot of sense. The Steelers started to do it last year. It was in some third and long obvious pass situations, but they took Timmons off the field. I don't know if that's an idea that they're going to love. It's kind of each team might have their own kind of idea, whether or not they like that idea, the pros and cons that come along with it. But, if you bring in Cash, you bring in the Shatavius Brown kid from Akron, both those guys are going to fit that bill. So, it's really making me think about it.
Have you watched any of that tape on Brown yet?
I haven't. I saw him at the NFL PA Bowl, though, when I was watching it when the game was live, and that dude was just all over the place. He's a crazy athlete. Should have been invited to the combine. It's a shame that he wasn't. It's the position defining that is the biggest issue with him. But when you look at the tape and the measurables and the way he times, he's just a crazy dude.
Yeah, I think freak athlete is the best way to describe him. Reportedly, I think did 33 reps on the bench mm-hmm. during his pro day. Light in the britches, 5'11", 222 pounds. He could probably put on, you look at his frame, probably put on, 4 or 5 pounds mm-hmm. without issue affecting that speed. But the Steelers, and as you've kind of, in the age of when we're talking of the buzzword being force players and athletic specimens, the Steelers really have been tending to gravitate towards those kind of players, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not only with the athleticism, but the production at the college level to back that up. When you look at a player like Jatavis Brown, 2015 MAC Defensive Player of the Year, that might not sound that big a deal, but there's a lot of talent in the MAC. I think, and when you have a guy that had what did he have, something like 80 I'm trying to remember what his total tackles is, and I didn't put that in my article, but he's a thumper for his size.
Yeah, I mean, the guy plays a lot of – I mean, I really just have seen him in the NFLPA bowl game, but, you know, you get a good kind of snapshot of who he is in that game alone. And, yeah, you're right. I mean, to the point about production, I mean, if you know, you're playing at a smaller conference, a non-Power 5 in the MAC, so – you have to be productive there. If you can't be productive in the MAC, I don't think you're going to be productive in the NFL. And, of course, Pittsburgh knows better than that about, you know, guys that can do well coming out of the MAC with Antonio Brown. So, you know, there's certainly no knock there. I'm going to try to pull up his stats now on Akron's website.
And Jatavis Brown is, I learned last night, scheduled to come in April 6th for a pre-draft visit. The Steelers won't be the only one bringing this guy in because he reportedly has a lot of teams interested in him. As Alex mentioned, he was probably one of the top five combine snubs, I would think. And then he went ahead and went to the Houston Regional Combine and just really had jaws dropping there as well.
Yeah, 20 tackles for a loss and 12 sacks last year, 4 forced fumbles, an interception, a pass breakup, 116 total tackles. I mean, in his career, 41.5 tackles for a loss, 18 sacks, 10 forced fumbles. You don't get a lot better production out of anyone than that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I expect him to be – we've already added him to our, you know, suspected visitor list. And as I said, I think that'll take place on April 6th. Let's see. Your boy Darian Thompson had his pro day a few days ago. And it doesn't sound like Mike Tomlin was there. I haven't been able to – figure out whether or not Kevin Colbert was there, but Steeler certainly did have people there to not only see him but talk to a few other guys there as well too. I think the big thing that we were waiting for with Thompson was to see if he could run better. He was supposedly sick during the combine. It looks like he answered a few of those concerns. Even so, do you still consider Thompson, you know, a first-round guy, or is he you know, slam-dunk second guy?
I don't think I consider him a first-rounder even after this pro day, Dave. And actually, I mean, you know, the 40 time was an improvement. I mean, he's in that kind of low to mid 4.5 range when he ran a 4.69 at the combine. But he didn't do, like, any other numbers. He didn't do his vert. He didn't do his broad. He did the long cone drill, but he didn't do the short shuttle. I don't think he did the 3-cone. And those numbers were all really poor, too. His vertical was 32.5. His broad was 9.10. I don't remember his agility drills off the top of my head, but neither of them were sparkling numbers. I don't know why he sat those out. I thought he would, you know, who doesn't want to improve on a 32.5-inch vertical? So although his 40 time was better, the fact that all of his other athletic, you know, numbers that we're going off of are poor, I just don't think you can justify that as a first-round pick. So he's not that. I mean, if he's there at 58, it's a different story, and I think I'd pull the trigger, but – as a first-rounder, no, I can't justify it.
Yeah, and I've had him kind of as a second-rounder throughout this process, and, you know, I'm with you. When you have – you want to see guys definitely compete,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially if they have subpar combines. And, you know, the Steelers will reportedly bring him in for a pre-draft visit. You would think they would like to get a couple of times on him, you know, before pulling the trigger on such a player. I mean, his tape, though, you know, if you didn't know any of the numbers, though, you know, related to him, and you just only went specifically off the tape, though, you have to like what you see there.
Of course, and that's why my first ever mock, I had Thompson there at 25. That's why I still like Thompson, don't get me wrong, but – you know, we can't ignore the numbers either, and they play, you know, part of the puzzle as well. And I just don't know how you know, I don't know how many safeties have ever gone that high that have had measurables and times that poor.
And the interesting thing with Cash is I don't think he was still – I still think he was limited during his pro day, not able to do much of anything because I think off that wrist surgery that he had, what, back in January
mm-hmm. –
So, you know, the Steelers bringing him in, at some point you'd have to wonder a private workout's going to be involved with him you know, as well too, to get some times with him. I currently have him as a third round guy.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, it's just going to depend on the scheme. I mean, the big question with a guy like Cash and Jatavius Brown is just, do we have a scheme that can include them? Are we adaptable, or are we, you know, let's say you have two good inside linebackers, and neither of them are going to come off the field. Maybe you don't have the scheme that can adapt to Cash, and now he's not going to even be on your radar because you simply just don't have the ability to fit him into your defense. Or maybe you're a team that's been open to it. Let's say hypothetically at Denver that's done some of this with a David Bruton, or Kansas City that's done some of this with a Hussein Abdullah. Both those guys are in, you know, Bruton went to Washington, Abdullah retired. So those teams could be more open to it now. Or there could be a team like Pittsburgh that's looking to the future that say, hey, maybe we're in a position to kind of adjust and adapt. So maybe it opens your eyes up to Cash more than it does a team that's a little bit more rigid with its roster. So those kind of guys are going to be all over the map, just depending on what kind of defense you have.
To kind of wrap up our discussion on Jeremy Cash, according to stats, he played 80% of the snaps last year at Duke. He was targeted 28 times in coverage, gave up 19 receptions, 274 yards, 2 touchdowns. Nothing jumps out at you really statistically other than a few things. Pressures. He had 19 pressures. Evidently, that ranked first in the nation as far as pressures went, and I'm assuming that's first in the nation for safeties. He also had 3 forced fumbles. That evidently ranked 6th in the nation as far as that goes. And what else was it that caught my 39 run disruptions, and that was first in the country. So definitely a guy that better closer to the line of scrimmage than he is away from the line of scrimmage.
Well, let's be honest. When you're playing, you know, 5 yards within the line of scrimmage, you're going to have the most pressures. You're going to have the most run stuff. So if any safety that's playing, you know, 10 yards back, you know.
Sure, sure. And I don't know if they're limiting this to the safety position overall, or they're limiting it to, you know, strong safeties or what. But those are just, 39 run disruptions. That's no joke. I don't care. You know, he plays in a decent conference, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, the numbers are nice, but I just know he's treating like a line. You know, I would rather – I'm more interested in comparing that to linebacker stats than I would be by – because he's playing basic linebacker form.
Sure, sure. And another interesting kind of hybrid that's been linked to the Steelers by, you know, several analysts so far this offseason, Sua Cravens out of USC has decided that – he's not going to do any private workouts.
Really? I didn't hear that.
I believe that's what he's come out and said, that he has, and his reasoning is, you know, I have so many, you know, so many teams interested that that's not, you know, not going to be in my agenda. And I found that pretty interesting. And I, in fact, I'm reading this right off of Pro Football Talk right now. Let's see. He won't be doing any private workouts for teams, his agent said or told PFT. The reason, he's getting a glut of requests. Too many teams have called to set up private workouts, his agent said, and I think Sua's body of work of film speaks for itself. So I don't know. I don't know if I like that decision.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about it. You always want to see guys compete. Now, that's different. That's obviously, just to clarify, because I know you know this, but just to make sure the general public knows, that's different than the pre-draft visits. You know, private workouts and pre-draft visits are two separate entities.
Right, right, most definitely. And the thing about it, though, is you would think a guy like him that has questionable draft stock as it is, mm-hmm. why wouldn't you try to improve it?
Yeah, I'm always in the go ahead and compete camp. This is the last time in your life you really have to do this kind of stuff. Well, maybe not the last time. You know how the NFL works with tryouts and stuff like that. But you know, this is the last kind of craziness like that. So show everything that you have, lay all your cards on the table, and get some team to fall in love with you.
The other guy that we expect to hear coming in today, whether or not it will take place, is two different things. Because a lot of times you'll hear some of these names and and it'll get reported that a player is going to make a pre-draft visit, then you never hear about him coming in. So I always like to kind of disclaim that. But Gerald Hawkins, the tackle out of LSU, the Steelers usually bring in, what, two or three guys at a time on these pre-draft visits. So we'll see if that winds up taking place. I would expect the team maybe sometime during today being Friday, that they would announce the guys that are in the building. But boy, a whole lot of defensive backs right now on the list that we've compiled so far. Jayron Kearse, Tavon Young, Ryan Smith, Jonathan Jones, Darian Thompson, Jeremy Cash, and for all practical purposes, consider, you know, Jatavis Brown in that category as well, too, coming in for visits. So corners / safety / hybrid linebackers, and of course over the course of the next several weeks, this list is going to grow now that we're in the month of April. What direction do you want to go next?
Well, they had just to bounce off of the Boise State kid, just real quick to talk about it. You know,
that's right. We had a few more guys we want to talk about.
Yeah, Tony Pauline does great work, and he was getting a ton of information on Pittsburgh up at Boise State yesterday. And, you know, take it with a grain of salt because this is the draft era, and there's going to be a lot of reports and a lot of information and a lot of misinformation. But, you know, he thought that he was hearing that, you know, the Steelers had interest in that Correa kid, the outside linebacker at 25. And I think some people have mocked him there. Some people are kind of looking towards that. So, you know, you have to think about the edge position as well. This team may be putting a high investment, as they should, in an outside linebacker.
And now we know the names, just as we're talking, this is coming across Twitter. Safety Deion Bush out of Miami. Safety Jeremy Cash from Duke. Cornerback David White from Georgia Tech. And as we mentioned, tackle Gerald Hawkins of LSU are four pre-draft visitors that the Steelers are having in today.
Is that the Steelers officially saying that?
It's being reported by several beat writers.
Beat writers, okay. So what's, you said Deion Bush, you said Hawkins, DJ White, and who was the other one?
David White was the cornerback from Georgia Tech, yeah. And Jeremy Cash. So two of the four that we knew. Deion Bush, of course, the Steelers were just at his Miami Pro Day, so it's probably not a surprise that he's right. being brought right. in.
I think David White and DJ White are the same guy, because remember the report, I think Luke did. I'm assuming that's the same person. But either way, the name that caught me there is Deion Bush. That's a kid I've watched four games of. I haven't done the report yet. But the biggest thing you want to know about Deion Bush is that guy can hit. I mean, that guy is a missile. He'll take your head off across the middle. So that is one of the biggest kind of intimidators and forcers in the safety class. And some people are really high on him. He's probably going to end up being a mid-round guy. But, man, I mean, you can just – it's very clear the direction the Steelers are going in, defensive back the whole way through.
You know, when you look at this list, and what pops out to me is DJ White from Georgia Tech, and it perfectly plays into I guess that what we would call the next segment here. He's a senior. He has plenty of playing time experience, although we haven't hit on this probably enough this offseason. Was voted one of the three team captains by his teammates after the third week of the season last year. Started 11 games. Not afraid to tackle, from what I've seen on him. Not afraid to stick his face in the fan. A little questionable in when it comes to, I believe, coverage, overall coverage, but this is a typical guy that the Steelers kind of look at to bring in, right, when you talk about cornerbacks.
Well, I mean, you take the lead on this one, Dave, because you did a fantastic breakdown. You know, I kind of love historical data and things like that, and you broke it down really well looking back at all the cornerbacks Kevin Colbert's ever drafted. And there's a pretty obvious trend with the guys they target, right?
Yeah, and I know people hate me in these trends, but they're hard to ignore. I mean, the first and foremost that we write up almost every time there's talk about a Steelers drafting a cornerback in the first round is the fact that, you know, they haven't done so since 1997. And that's the most obvious thing here. But when you go back and you look during the Kevin Colbert era at the actual cornerbacks that they have drafted, I mean, several things stick out. And For those of you, this is the math portion of the podcast, so please have your 11 toes ready. All 16 have been seniors.
Wow.
And most of them, I think the average, what was the they've averaged 22.55 years of age at the time they were drafted. They've also averaged a total of 44.9 games played in during their college careers. And as I mentioned, if that's not enough, every one of those 16 players entered the NFL after their senior seasons. Now, of course, you're going to have kind of outliers in here when it comes to age, and the most obvious one that you can point to is Ricardo Coakley, who I believe was 20.59 years of age when the Steelers drafted him back in 2004. He also only played 20 games at Tusculum. However, he was a transfer. He transferred there after his sophomore season, so in aspect, you probably should count the 20 games, that he had played elsewhere. I think it was Kilgore Junior College. I don't even know where that is, but came across that in my research, and I'm not sure if I even knew that prior to writing this up. That Ricardo Coakley selection obviously didn't go well for the Steelers, and surprisingly, the only other real outlier in all this was Ike Taylor. And Ike was obviously old enough. I think he was just a few weeks short of his 23rd birthday, but he only played, I think, 23 games at in Louisiana Lafayette. And if many remember, I believe Ike Taylor walked on for his junior season. Am I correct?
I couldn't tell off the top of my head.
And of course, people know the story. He was a running back, at least initially. Mm-hmm. And but when you look at this list of 16 players, he's the most successful. outside of really, William Gay, and then I guess Bryant McFadden, and then obviously Keenan Lewis. But That's what the data tells us, that if they do draft a cornerback this year, it will be one that was a senior last year. It will likely be one that's played almost 40 games, at college. Now that's obviously different than starts, but they want a player that's seen the field quite a bit, and it really is hard to argue and go against this data. And then of course I included, look at what many would consider the top or the second tier of cornerbacks in this year's draft class that the Steelers obviously would have a chance at drafting: Eli Apple, Mackenzie Alexander, and William Jackson III. If you go by what this data tells you, you have to throw out Eli Apple and Mackenzie Alexander because both are coming out as redshirt sophomores. On top of that, Eli Apple is not even 21, won't even be 21 years old at the time he's drafted, while Mackenzie Alexander kind of qualifies, almost 22 and a half years old at time of draft day. The games play, and really his tape, in my opinion, kind of rules him out. But William Jackson III is the guy that you kind of circle and say that if the Steelers do draft a cornerback in the first round this year, it's going to be William Jackson III.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm really leaning heavily towards. And I said that the other day before I saw your study, and I think it only confirms that feeling more. And now, of course, the majority of players might be seniors because you have more seniors than you have underclassmen. But the underclassmen pool's really been getting bigger and bigger. You have close to 100 underclassmen, I think, that declared this year. And you had, basically near that number for the last 5 years or so. And you look at the guys that have already been brought in: Jonathan Jones, senior; DJ White, senior, 48 games; Tavon Young, senior, started, I think, at least 40 games off the top of my head. He's probably played in 45 or so. So it all kind of fits.
And the small school kid as well, too, out of North Carolina, right?
Yeah, I'll actually have his bio pulled up right now. He's been starting his redshirt freshman year. He started 8 games, and he's been doing at least that ever since. So they all kind of really fit that bill, absolutely. So I think with the interest that they've shown in William Jackson, And although there are still some competing reasons against that, corner, outside power five, yada, yada, it's hard to think that if it's Jackson versus, you know, the field at cornerback, the answer is going to be William Jackson.
Yeah, and, you know, I've already broken down thoroughly, and this kind of lets us kind of segue into the next section here. I broke down 2014 and 2015, all the targets of McKenzie Alexander. Had that on the site last week. We've already discussed that. I have since done Eli Apple. And, you know, throw out the age and all what we just discussed there. I definitely, after watching all of his games from 2015 season, I definitely like Eli Apple more than I do McKenzie Alexander. And I think you have those two reversed. Am I right?
Currently, yeah. I like Alexander more than I like Apple.
Now Apple, I think, does a lot better job, especially in man coverage, of staying in it more in phase, I thought, than Alexander. He also contested a lot more passes than Alexander did. Although he only had, what, the one interception, mm-hmm, last year, Eli Apple. I think he had, what, two or three the year before. But regardless, I think he has better ball skills. I think he has better feet underneath him. Now, the tackling is the elephant in the room with him, mm-hmm, and that not only shows up, you know, after the catch, it also and I tried to focus. I mean, trust me, folks, when you watch that many games and you're trying to do it as fast as you can, you're trying to chart down the distance and everything that goes along with it. It's hard to watch every single defensive snap, you know, talking about run game support and all. But in what I was able to pay attention to, you know, not great there, and that's been kind of the narrative on him. He is willing in that area of his game. It's just he's not very good at, mm-hmm, it. And you know, when you talk about Steelers cornerbacks, you would like them to more than it. Look, I can maybe forgive the run support, because I mean, how many times is a game as a outside corner with the Steelers really involved or asked to be involved that much, yeah, with run support? I'm not using that as a crutch, obviously, but you know what gets me is after the catch. Mm-hmm. You know, you, for years, you know, we heard Dick LeBeau talk about, you know, if you're going to give up the catch, put a receiver on the ground, and that's something that Eli Apple struggles with now. I think he goes in the first round. I think he's a slam dunk first round guy. I think there's a good chance he'll be off the board come the time the Steelers pick 25th overall. But with that said, if he's not, I can't see the Steelers. I see the Steelers bypassing him.
Because of the run support issue?
Yeah, mostly, and with all the other factors, mm-hmm, now that you can, right, play into this, you know, like the experience, you know, like an older player. Right. Now, one thing definitely he has going for his in his favor is the fact that he played for the Ohio, mm-hmm, State. So we know how they are when it comes to that. But I firmly, Alex, I have Eli Apple ahead of McKenzie Alexander, and I'm not ready to point to the fence on this just yet, but don't be surprised if McKenzie Alexander falls out of the first round.
Yeah, no, I know you've been saying that for a while, and I get it. And someone might out of, you know, Alexander, Apple, William Jackson. I mean, it's tough to see them all go, you know, within the first round when you have some other corners who are going to go as well. It's interesting. I'm looking over my notes again, Dave, and even though Apple, I think, is a younger player, I'm not sure if he's played more or not than Alexander. I think actually he's probably a little bit more refined and a little bit more of a technician than McKenzie Alexander. And that's great for Apple, but the other thing is I think Alexander is just a better athlete, and I think that, you know, I think that you can work on Alexander's flaws more than you can work on Apple. Apple's always going to be a guy that's going to have that smaller frame that's going to struggle against the run. I think Alexander struggles to stay in phase. Well, Apple does a nice job, but I think you can teach that with Alexander a lot better than you can with trying to fix Eli Apple against the run. I think Alexander has some issues against the run, but I think it's more of just an angle and tackling angle kind of thing where he goes too low. You can correct that. It's harder to correct Apple's flaws. So I think that's the big thing for me, Dave, just kind of thinking out loud right now. I think that they both have flaws in different ways, but I think Alexander's are a lot more correctable than Apple's.
And I think when you talk about between gaps of where they are now to what their ceiling might be, I think that gap is indeed greater for Alexander.
Yeah.
I think Apple is closer to his ceiling than what Alexander is. With that said, though, I'm still not convinced that teams won't look at Alexander more as a nickel.
Well, I mean, nickels are almost starters, though, still. So there might be a slight devaluation there. But, you know, I think he can play outside. I think if you can play him in the nickel, I think if you say in your five-year plan that we can eventually get this guy where he can play outside and against base, you know, offenses, and he can kick inside and sub-package football, then you're going to have a lot of extra value there. So I agree. I think Alexander has more upside. I think he has more work to do to get to that upside. But I think a lot of his issues are just coaching points.
Now, the project, which will take me a little bit longer here, is doing the same from the 2015 season with targets with William Jackson. Mm-hmm. And I started that process Thursday night. And one thing that even though it was against a real lower tier school, Tennessee Tech was his first game last year. That's the first game in you know that I've gone through thoroughly of his. Boy, the speed, the speed just—I mean, it jumped off the tape, and it happened after a catch, and it happened after a catch, not even to a man that he was covering. His ability to track this guy down from behind and deliver, even though you'd like to see him wrap up better, just a crushing hit from behind just jumped out immediately on film with him. Now, in that first game, he was targeted 3 times in coverage. He only had to play 41 snaps. It was a blowout. He did not give up a reception in there. He had the one tackle, and he actually had 2 passes defensed in that game. So I'm at the beginning of stages of that, and I'm – you know, I know what little film I've seen on him on the cut-ups up until now, so I'm trying not to let that cloud my judgment of where I have him is. But I have a feeling when all is said and done, when I'm done with this, that I'm going to have William Jackson ahead of Mackenzie Alexander. And not only that, I might end up having him ahead of Eli Apple.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it. I'm really interested. Any idea when that's going to go up? Is that going to be a weekend or a Monday thing or any?
Don't push me. Don't push.
Fair enough.
There's 100 targets to go through, and that's like doing 2 players here. So, you know, I don't want to put a deadline on. I'm going to shoot maybe for Monday. You know, but it could be next Friday at this time. The thing is, and I pointed this out recently, is I don't have his Louisville tape yet, and that was the second game of the season. I don't have the fourth game of the season that he played against Tulsa. I don't have that tape. And the tape that I'm really wanting to see the most of this kid, really outside of his play, which most of us have already seen in the bowl game against Florida State, is his game against UConn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so people, if you find any of those games talking about Louisville, what was the other one? Tulsa, and more specifically the UConn tape, because the UConn tape, he allowed 2 TDs in that game. He was targeted 6 times. He gave up 5 receptions according to stats, you know, charting of the game. Now, I, of course, want to double check all these, but, you know, so. I might get an incomplete on this one just because of the sheer fact that I'm not going to have all the tape.
Yeah, I want to, for a second here, go back to a study that I did the other day, Dave. I don't know if you want to pull it up or not, that small school study that I did, because I've talked about it a million times before, but I can never really say it with complete confidence about how the Steelers kind of stacked up with taking small school players. And the feeling was always, you know, that they really didn't do it that often. We knew they'd only taken 2 Nick Williams and Cortez Allen under Mike Tomlin, but you wanted to see exactly how that stacked up with the rest of the league. And after going through the study, I really was able to confirm that of their 76 selections under Mike Tomlin, only 2 of them have been small school, defining small school as FCS and below. Only the Denver Broncos have taken fewer players from the FCS level and below than Pittsburgh. And so I thought that was an interesting kind of way to be able to finally frame it.
Yeah, that was another interesting in-depth study. Congratulations to you on that. That has that has some weight to it, right?
Right. I mean, again, it's not to say all end all because, you know, things change every single year, but you use these big historical trends, and it's not even, you know, I didn't do the study this far, but we know under Kevin Colbert, only four, you know, only two other players, four in total since 2000, have been taken from that level. So there's a pretty big trend there. And if you look at teams that have drafted the most, again, the Steelers were 2 of 76. That's 2.6%. The team with the highest percentage was Jacksonville, who's taken 14 small school kids out of 67 pick. That's almost 21%. So you see the big disparity between the most, which is about 21%, and the least, which is right around Pittsburgh, around 2.5%. So the Steelers aren't like, you know, they're close. It's not like the top team is 10%, and there's still just kind of a, you know, just small, you know, gap between. So again, if you look at it, if you want to do a mock and think about who the team is actually going to wind up taking, you're better off sticking to the Power Five.
If you had to circle two or three names of small school kids that with the best chance.
Oh man. Well, I mean, they brought in Ryan Smith in North Carolina Central, so I mean, there's always something to be said for that. And again, they bring in about, you know, I did a quick kind of research on that the other day. I didn't even do a post on it, but they bring in about three small school kids for that official 30 visits every single year. And I think they've only drafted one out of like the 16 I looked at over the last 5 years or so, or something like that. So I'll put him on the board because there's kick return value to that as well. He is a senior. He does have a ton of starting experience. So I'll put him into that. I'll give you DeAndre Houston Carson from William & Mary, which, of course, there's a very obvious Tomlin connection there. But, you know, this is a guy that got to play at the Senior Bowl, got to play at the Combine, or got invited to the Combine. So you get some of that big school exposure, which is really important, I think, for Pittsburgh in evaluating these small school guys. They want to be able to see them at times on a big stage and see how they compete. Now, I don't think Houston Carson had a great week in Mobile, but I don't think it was terrible either. But the fact that he was there is the most important thing to me. This is a guy that has immense special teams value at the least. This is a guy that got moved from corner to safety for a senior season. So there's a transition, you know, time there, so you kind of understand that when you watch the tape. Some people are really high on him. I'm not as high on him, but this is a guy that can hit, can run a little bit, and I think he's just kind of learning his craft at safety. So I'll give you Ryan Smith and DeAndre Houston Carson.
All right, fair enough. And I forgot to circle back to this when we were talking about Boise State. Mm-hmm. I think you were trying to get me to, but I didn't take your heads up. In addition to Darian Thompson, they also reportedly showed some interest in Kamalehi Correa. Mm-hmm. Did I say that right?
You got Correa. Correa, right? I know that for sure.
I think it's Kamalea, but regardless, outside linebacker prospect, reportedly, I think had some dined with him in some aspect the night before, I think, his pro day. Now, we don't know who that was that dined with him. Could have been Joey Porter for all we know. But an interesting guy, but a guy. Shorter arms than how did, let me ask you this, how would he fit in based on that study that you did recently with Steelers and outside linebackers?
Ooh, let me pull it up. I know he didn't make the cut. It might have been an arm length issue. He's a good athlete and he tested well, and I mean he can occasionally win the edge, but I think there's a lack of strength there. You know, the arm length isn't great. Let me. I'm gonna stall.
This is a guy though that I still think, and I've watched two or three of the cut ups. I like him, but I think he's just being pushed up there in the top two rounds without good enough reason.
Yeah, and that was kind of. I did the report on him a month ago. I'd have to go back and look at some of it. Let me see if he did fit, because I think that I screwed up some stuff where I wasn't looking at the conversion guys closely enough, and I'm gonna go ahead and redo some of my lists and just kind of get out there one more time to make sure I haven't missed anything. So my criteria, 6'1", 240, arm length of around 32 inches. What is Correa at? Correa's only at 31 5/8, so it was the arm length that really got him. I think he checked... his broad jump, too. The broad jump criteria was 9.5. He jumped only 9 feet even at the combine.
He,
I don't know what he did.
He bettered that supposedly according to these unofficial pro day numbers, 9.9.
Okay. So that would get him under there then. think that would be? I mean, shuttle drills, he didn't participate at the combine. I'm sure he did at his pro day. I don't know. But I
4.25, not bad.
Yeah, again, the pro day numbers, so they are a little – I didn't really ever count them in my study because they just weren't reliable. But, you know, that's something to look at. But so the big thing with him, the big bugaboo, is the arm length.
And you agree that people are where do you have him, third, fourth-round guy?
Let me look at my report real quick. I think, you know, like you said, the edge class, because it's weak this year, you look at some of the top guys, Noah Spence, you know, Calhoun from Michigan State, and then Correa might be kind of, you know, up there. He might get inflated a little bit because of the lack of the edge class. I did like him. I just don't think for Pittsburgh in my scouting report, which I did back in early March, I put a late second, early third on him.
There was one guy that you inadvertently left off your list, and Joey Porter worked him out this week, right?
Yeah, and he was actually the thing. I kept going back and forth on it. And this is another guy with a fun name to pronounce. Yannick Nagaki? Is that how you pronounce it?
You're asking me how to pronounce something?
Fair
That's
enough.
Funny.
He checks most of the boxes, but here's the weird thing with the study I did on outside linebackers, because it came down with the agility drills. There was some correlation, but not – most of these guys at the combine did not do the agility drills. Now, Ngakoue, I think it's Ngakoue, he did it, but he missed a threshold. So it depends if you want to count that or not, and you can debate if we should hold it against them because we're giving other players that didn't participate, we're giving them passes. But bottom line is, I mean, athletically, he's pretty solid. There's some production there. I think, you know, and it wouldn't surprise me to see him on the, you know, in the Steelers' radar in that third, fourth round range.
And Joey Porter was at his pro day this past week, and he even worked out all those linebackers, ran them through their drills. 6'2", 252 pounds. Last season registered, I think, 38 total tackles, 13.5 sacks, and 13.5 of those sacks took place in 10 different games. So, you know, there was production there with him. He definitely checks most of the boxes, and it would not be surprising one bit to see him brought to Pittsburgh for a pre-draft visit here in the coming weeks. Rough estimate round, he's another third, fourth round type guy.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of thinking, like I mentioned. And yeah, I mean, the you know, he ran well. He ran 4.75. He jumped okay, 34.5 inches, 9.10 in the broad. But his short shuttle was 4.5 flat. His three cone was 7.35, and both those missed the Steelers' threshold. Again, there's some debate to be had looking at other guys like Bud Dupree and Jarvis Jones that don't have, you know, they didn't do it at the combine, but did it at their pro day, and their numbers weren't great either. But that change of a direction is really important for an outside linebacker. So I don't know if you want to count him as a fit or not, but clearly someone that has some interest in.
Real quick to kind of wrap up and give people a little bit of a heads up on some people the Steelers look at. There was a report by Rain Getlin on Thursday, the Steelers, you know, while they were there in Houston watching William Jackson III at his pro day, evidently paid some pretty good interest in linebacker Elandon Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
Not surprising, probably, right? Led the nation in 2015 with 88 solo tackles while ranking fourth nationally and leading his school's conference with 142 total tackles. He was a team captain. Can't stress that enough. Mm-hmm. We probably don't, you know, them looking at guys that are team captains. Started in all 14 games last season. Supposedly had a great pro day here recently. And a guy that, while probably going to be a round six selection, we should probably expect him to be brought in for a pre-draft visit, right?
It's certainly possible, Dave, and I haven't watched his tape. I think he apparently might have a cool highlight video out there. I saw some buzz on Twitter about people, I think, talking something about a highlight video. But, yeah, the production there, captain, of course, that's a great point, Dave. That's absolutely huge for Pittsburgh and every team. A guy like DJ White was a captain, the corner from Georgia Tech, so that's really – a big bonus there. And then to round things out, I think Mike Munchak was at South Carolina for Brandon Schell, the offensive tackle, who definitely was on our quote-unquote fit list. And then John Mitchell went to South Carolina State for Javon Hargrave, who's probably going to go a lot higher than people think. So just kind of rounding things out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think you're about done with these studies pretty close, right?
Yeah.
Still have saves?
They're all done because just the other positions, the sample size wasn't there to really work on.
I got you. Well, great job on that as well, too. We're hard at work during the off season, aren't we?
There's no off season.
There's no such thing as off season. Yeah. All right, folks, we'll be back on Monday. We'll see if David Todd's back with me. If not, Alex Cazora will be back with me. You can follow me on Twitter at Cedars Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Cazora at Alex_Cazora. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com, if you want to donate, and we certainly could use some donations. You go to SteelersDepot.com, you see the donate button in the navigational bar. Happy April. It's draft month. We don't have much longer to wait, and thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.